Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The metaverse is coming.
The metaverse.
It's here. Microsoft buys Activision Blizzard for $69 billion in cash. Can you imagine having $69 billion in cash on your balance sheet?
Or being able to part with it and still be a healthy company.
So this, again, is the concern. And it's been happening in tech for years and years and years. Like, you just have this mega consolidation happening. Trillion-dollar companies. If I start a new tech startup and I say, hey, I'm going to be the next Google. Like,
laughed out of the room.
Yeah, laughed out of the room. Yeah. But if you say, hey, Google's going to buy me for $100 million, be like, oh,
great idea.
Yeah, I'm listening. and then, by the way, if you fail, Google buys you for tens of millions just for the talent.
Half the time, yes.
Yeah. So
buddy worked at one of those.
Yeah.
And you got a job at Google.
It's like the show Silicon Valley, where, yeah. you reach a certain scale. It becomes arbitrary. You're playing with what Tim O'Reilly calls super money.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost impossible to compete with super money. The laws of business physics stop applying. I'm a former small private company operator. Like, this about me. I'm really acutely attuned to the laws of business physics. You know, it's like, hey, we got to watch what we spend and try and grow into it and do all this stuff. But like, after you achieve orbit or liftoff, then like none of that stuff applies to you anymore. This week on Forward, an open Democratic primary in 24, why Dems are frustrated with Joe Biden, Microsoft making a big bet on the metaverse, buying Activision Blizzard, plus Yang Gang vintage merch is back at andrewyang.com. This week on Forward. We are back. Welcome back from a triumphant trip to Buffalo.
I know it's not a sports podcast, but let's go Bills. I'll save Bills shirt.
We'll close on that.
But let's just say I'm in a good mood today, as is the entire city of Buffalo.
I will say, if you turn on an NFL game and it's whatever, 0 degrees there, and you know your friend drove 6.5 hours to be there, then you're like, wow, I really hope they win.
Yeah, man. I've done the trip to Buffalo after losing and then driving back after, and it's not fun. So
it's a very, very high variance experience.
Oh, high variance. But the feeling feels so good when you win, though. Anyway, we're back. Happy Thursday, America.
Happy Thursday. And we are back with some big political predictions. I am completely shifting gears, Zach.
Uh-oh.
Where I thought that it was going to be a Trump-Biden rematch in 2024,
mm-hmm.
because I thought the Democrats would not want to have a fractious primary in the face of Trump. But now I have changed my mind. I believe that the Democrats are going to open it up.
You're so fake. How dare you? You liar. You chain. I don't know. I'm just pretending to be a bad Twitter troll.
That's funny. I got some updated information that has changed my thinking. But
is that info?
Well, the single biggest piece of information is how Joe is doing. I mean, it's really...
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. Where the deference within the Democratic Party to him is plummeting quick. I was stunned that he showed up in Georgia for a voting rights speech and Stacey Abrams did not show up. I mean, it's literally her issue. And it's Georgia, and it's the president of your party, and you are running for governor and you have a scheduling conflict. I mean, Georgia's not that big a state.
you don't have a scheduling conflict with the president.
You could get there, you know, and if you have an event scheduled, you could be like, hey, FYI, president's in town. So, you know, we're going to reschedule and everyone will be like, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. sure, get that. So that was, to me, a massive shock.
All you need to know.
That is a lot of what you need to know. The other thing that happened was that he went to the Senate to give a speech to the senators about abandoning the filibuster for voting rights and election reform.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets there, and then Kyrsten Sinema gives a big speech about how the filibuster is going nowhere before Joe gets there, making Joe's speech like a complete non-event. And then Joe just ended up talking off the cuff instead. To the extent that there's any deference to Joe, it's just disappearing very, very fast. So that's number one. Number two is that I heard from a number of donors that they are looking for an alternative. And so where the donors go, you can be pretty sure the party and the candidates are going to go.
Right.
Because,
at least mainstream.
Let's just say they're a leading indicator. And if you have major donors who are going to their favorite candidate, hey, think you should ready yourself for a run in 24, the candidate is going to start thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that like they're trying to keep it on the down low until the midterms, but I now believe this is happening.
This is fascinating, which is going to make this podcast at least politically more interesting. So Joe, I'm fascinated. I'm always fascinated by how these candidates brand themselves, right? And so Joe branded himself in 2020 as, you know, Joe, nostalgia.
Restore the soul of America.
Restore the soul of America. Let's bring the sanity back, right? And which is a platitude, essentially, which is there's no real policy vision there, which is fine. Like, I think a lot of people were like, yeah, like we can all kind of get behind this vanilla.
Return to normalcy.
Right. And then unless he is, in my opinion, unless you're proactive on branding yourself with a vision of what we're going to execute on, you then just leave this void for everyone else to define you, right?
He had a mantra, which is we're going to build back better.
Yes.
And then build back better became this legislative package that ended up failing. That's another reason why you can look at this and say, okay, I think someone else is going to end up the Democratic nominee.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to send signals and then step aside.
Is this kind of a byproduct of the times getting so polarizing, or is it a leadership failure?
Trump got that tax cut passed, mm-hmm. And the Republicans...
Quickly-ish, right?
Yeah, and the Republicans had Congress, so that was their big legislative accomplishment. The Democrats' legislative accomplishment is going to be this Infrastructure Act.
Right.
And there were some other things that got passed, too, the COVID Recovery Act.
Yeah,
that,
I got a lot of
those,
passed
right. early on. So there were, like, two big bills
mm-hmm.
that passed. Part of it is the messaging and expectation.
Right.
There are a lot of people I know who are upset at this sense that the Democrats promised something and then did not deliver. The two big things that stick out in my head that I've heard directly from black activists, mm-hmm. actually. Number one is student loan forgiveness.
What the hell? That's easy.
Yeah.
Especially federally.
And student loan forgiveness we should discuss. So it has gotten punted down the road time and time again, where if you have student loans, you have not had to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to resume February 1. Yep. That got pushed back
this year, right?
Yeah. That got pushed back to May 1.
Right. By the way, these delays are so annoying for people paying debt, in the sense that do I have to, like, if you're, because you're all got this boot on your throat and it gets lifted a little bit, you're like, can I make a decision?
Well, here's
can
the thing, Zach. It's gotten lifted now for the better part of 2 years.
Yeah, that's true.
And the odds of it actually kicking back in May strike me as vanishingly low.
Okay.
Because if you're the Dems, let's see, if you kick the can down the road again,
mm-hmm.
then you seem like you're keeping your constituents in mind. If you have it kicked back in, you have millions of people resuming debt payments 6 months before midterms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so at a minimum, the Dems will be like, and let's push this off again.
Political football this.
For 7 months until December. Like that strikes me as the most likely outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But many people are ticked off that Biden has not done more to forgive significant proportion, or in some cases all, of student loan debt. The other big one is voting rights and election protections. They've promised very big things on that and not delivered. there are folks in Georgia in particular who feel afflicted because state rules around this have changed. And they feel like the administration didn't do enough. And then when he came down to give this Georgia speech, they weren't that pumped about it. And now they're trying to get it done in the Senate and they're two votes short. So those are the two things that Democrats, I think, have been disappointed on. And it's going to really, really hurt enthusiasm later this year. This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product, and if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Canceling student loans. The arguments on both for and against, like, one, you've talked about the boot, like, you've got a generation of students, now probably two generations of students with just massive amounts of debt. You also have a bunch of folks that have worked or made life choices and sacrifices to pay off their student loans, and it would be, I don't know, feeling shortchanged or upset that they didn't get theirs for free. Not that that is probably enough in mass. Thoughts on how you do that politically in practice, how that mechanically works, and maybe even elaborate why you think Joe hasn't done it.
I talked about this on the trail where I think student loan debt is out of control, and a lot of it was immorally generated. You're looking at $1.7 trillion plus. It's crippling the ambitions of a generation or more. I mean, it's not just young people, too. I mean, there are a lot of middle-aged people and older that have massive loads of debt. Is there a fairness issue between people who still have debt and either worked to pay that debt off over a long period of time or never went to school because they were afraid of the debt? Like, yeah, there's a fairness issue.
Right.
And in my ideal world, you would do something broader, like, for example, some version of universal basic income, mm-hmm. and then be like, hey, you know, if you have debt, you can pay it off. If you don't, you know, you have money. Like that struck me as more fair. The problem right now is that there's no administration of being able to distribute things to people that don't have student loan debt. And there is a mechanism where the president can potentially forgive the student loan debt. And it's in a bit of a legal gray area, but it seems like there's like a strong argument to be made that he could mm-hmm. forgive the student loan debt. So then if you're in a binary choice where it's like, hey, I can forgive some or all of the student loan debt or do nothing,
right?
Then in my mind, even with the fairness issues, like, you should do something because it's going to lighten the burden for a ton of people. It's going to improve the economy. It's like a fine way to get buying power back into the economy.
Right.
Why is he not doing it? That is a very interesting question. I think that Biden has some innate hesitance and conservatism around mass debt forgiveness at this scale. One thing he said he would do is he'd forgive up to $10,000 per person. And even with that, they're like, okay, so why not do that? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, if Congress passes legislation for that, then we'll do it. Of course, the odds of Congress passing that are zero. Yeah. So I'm at a bit of a loss as to why. Okay, the reason why he's not just writing an executive order saying, I'm going to forgive $10,000 in student loan debt for everyone, is that probably wouldn't even make anyone happy. Like, there'd be a handful of people that maybe only had $10,000 in student loan debt, but if you had more, then you'd be like, keep going. Right. Like, well, you know, what is this? Like, and then people who were on the outside looking in would be like, what are you forgiving their $10,000 for and not my car loan or whatever.
So you don't make the people you're helping that happy, and you piss off the people who would be pissed off.
So but for the record, again, my choice, my preference would be like broader relief to everyone. So it's like distributed in a way that people can be on board with. But if I had this choice and I was in his shoes and I had like, you know, just limited options, I would forgive the student loan debt.
Yeah. I would say, so I had like 180 to 200 grand plus in student loans. And I solved for that by selling my soul on Wall Street. And like, I liked my, it was fine, but it was not what I would have chosen, right? And that's 10 years of my life doing that, right? Like on a personal level, you're like, man, I did all this for something that the government just forgave to everybody after. So I made this like life altering choice. And I'm sure, and millions of others have as well. But on the other hand, there's a difference between like what affects you personally and what affects the masses, right? And the reality is I just have so many friends and family who are just, they suffer from it. It's awful.
I also had six figures in a student loan debt. I used to call it my mistress, you know, writing a check to Sally Mae. You know, I hope you're having a good life.
Sally.
I'm trying to figure out how many years it took me to pay that off. Doing some math. I'm getting old.
It was 9 for me, 8 or 9. But I would basically, at Wall Street, I would get a bonus. And so I would get like some chunks and I would just pretend, I'd live on the salary and just pretend the bonus didn't exist. But if you're trying to like live with that and just chip away, I mean, there's plans out there. Well, you just never get out of it.
Yeah.
You're just paying the interest.
It took me 10 years and a lot of good fortune. In my case, I still had the debts until my company was acquired. And then I was like, oh, you know,
there flush.
I might as well just.
So in order to get out of student loan debt, you have to start
and sell and a build company.
It's
ridiculous.
Right. You have to go get a job on Wall Street.
I was running the company and just drawing a salary, you know, like I was gradually paying the debt down on like a 25-year timeline or something. Right. Completely unrealistic for the vast, vast majority of student debt holders and whatnot.
The way to do this is have it's and this has been proposed, not my ideas, is that public education, if it's state funded or federal funded, educate public schools like colleges, universities, are free, or you can do a whole bunch of like revenue sharing agreements with companies. But in that way, I think there are certain degrees that. Like, you know, one of the
there's a lot of bullshit in the education.
Yes,
there's
like, right, and they're private companies charging you out the ass for degrees that will never make you any money.
You know what's the darkest, Zach, is that if you go to someone who's issuing, let's say, questionable degrees of questionable value to poor black students or Latino students or whomever, or military veterans or whatever vulnerable population it is, which, by the way, is what they do.
It happens all the time,
And then you go to them and be like, hey, like what you're doing totally messed up. They'll be like, no, I'm serving this vulnerable, underserved population, and it's a really wholesome mission. And like, you know, back off, because if we're not doing it, then no one's doing it. And blah 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 blah. And that's, for the most part, bullshit. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if let's say you were a nonprofit, like making that argument, then I'd be much more open to it. But the people who are making those arguments are the most shady for-profit schools that are returning money to investors. So it's like, look, if you really cared about serving military veterans or whatnot, why not forego like, you know, like your massive investor returns, like the profit margins? Because the profit margins on that stuff are often very high because they're siphoning off the government.
Yeah.
It's some really dark stuff. This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give randos a chance to invade your privacy? When you go online without a VPN, ISPs can see every single website you visit, and they can legally sell this information without your consent to ad companies and big tech, who can then use your data to target you and profit, not to your benefit. Generally at your expense. So using ExpressVPN, it's like being a member of a high-tech company that's on your side, where they beam you into a server in another part of the world. No one can see anything you do. Just fire up the app, click one button, and you're beamed onto a completely safe, anonymized internet. They can't do anything with your data. I use ExpressVPN to have that peace of mind. To secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/yang today. That's expressvpn.com/yang. And you can get an extra 3 months for free. expressvpn.com/yang.
So voting rights is sticky. It's tougher because national Democrats aren't as all in on the whole voting rights package that I think the voting rights activists want to pass. Specifically, not being able to vote without an ID is a big hangup. I think one of the hangups. Some of these go pretty far. I always thought it was kind of racist to assume that the notion is that people of color can't get an ID, and that felt racist and kind of belittling to me. But that might be naive. Help me understand where the hangup is on voting rights.
There's not evidence of widespread voter fraud or people voting when they're not supposed to in really just about any context. And so if you are passing rules to make it more difficult to vote, then you do have to question. It's like, well, why are you passing these rules? Are you really concerned about it? These rules, in my opinion, go the wrong direction. We should be making it easier to vote, not harder to vote.
I agree with that.
I would suggest that the single biggest infringement on people's ability to vote is that they have to vote in many cases in closed party primaries.
And the registration bullshit.
And the registration. And
those are actual issues, correct?
Yeah, no one's talking about that. And so
no one's talking about that. No one's talking about the fact that the mayoral registration deadline in New York City, the primary is 6 months after the presidential when no one's paying attention. And the registration deadline is 6 weeks, maybe a little more.
It's 4 months early ahead.
Yeah. It's in February.
4 months ahead of time. Yeah,
ridiculous.
So you have very strange infringements that everyone's like, nothing to see here. Now, I again think that these state rules were passed for partisan reasons. It's just a partisan thing.
I'm a blue state. I'm a blue city. I keep more Republicans out of my election. We keep it blue.
Yeah, I'm a red state. You know, I'm going to make it a bit harder for Dems people with, frankly, lower levels of resource to vote that overlaps with people of color. Right. Like, it's going to increase my chance to win.
Yep.
It cuts the wrong direction. It is part and parcel with a lot of other things that are happening in terms of redistricting and gerrymandering that just the parties play hardball on. So this is a version of partisan hardball that the Democrats are now framing as much more deep and fundamental than that. There are a couple of intersecting issues here is that a lot of these rules are being adopted at the state level by Republican legislators. And so members of Congress are like, hey, let's fix this. Now, there are some things I, by the way, completely agree with that I would love Congress to help address. Like, do I think that state legislators should be able to fire and override secretaries of state who certify election results? No. So there are a lot of things I agree with about the Democrats' efforts. Right. But they aren't able to get it done because they need a few Republicans or precisely 10 Republicans to be on board with some version of it. And this is something that I believe is a strange process choice by the Democrats. And I believe it's because they want to moralize and signal to their base more than anything else. As we're having this conversation, the Senate right now is proceeding on voting for legislation that they don't have the votes for, mainly to put pressure on Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin to have to come up and say, like, hey, I'm not for this bill.
Got it.
Now, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin have said publicly, I am not for this bill. If you put it up to a vote, I am not going to vote for it. The odds of them then having a change of heart when the vote happens strike me as zero.
Yeah.
Because that's going to make them seem like completely wishy-washy. They've already taken a stand. And they've made a calculation or a choice that either they think it's the right thing or the voters are cool with it. The only real path forward would be to adopt something that the Republicans are open to, at least a few of them. There are some noises that Republicans are open to something around the Electoral Count Act, which is this really bizarre process through which, there's some shades of gray as to how you certify a presidential election result. So Republicans are like, hey, we'll look at that. And there are some other things Republicans are open to. Now, like it or not, you need a handful of Republicans or Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin to get on board with something passing. The problem right now is that they're going through these motions. It's not going to succeed, in my opinion. And it's going to end up stiffening both Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin around this issue and maybe more issues, because you could theoretically resuscitate parts of Build Back Better if Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema got on board via reconciliation. So it's been a really strange order of operations where they were going for Build Back Better. Manchin crashes it, says, hey, I'm walking away from this thing. There was, in my opinion, a glimmer of hope that they could try and bring it back. But then they said, you know what? We're going to go to voting rights.
Voting rights. Or filibuster reform.
Or filibuster reform to lead to voting rights legislation. And then Manchin's like, hey, not on board with that either. And on this one, Sinema's like, I'm not on board with this either. And on the filibuster, there are a couple of other Democratic senators were like, I'm not sure where I am on this. So then you go to this, and let's say this fails, which it looks like it almost certainly will. It will fail. I'll say that. Like, why hedge? Then they'll be like, okay, now what do we do? Like, go back to Build Back Better, like, after you essentially tried to push Manchin into a corner, where Manchin will be like, hey, now that you tried to shove me over on this filibuster stuff, yeah, now let's talk about the legislation that, oh, by the way, now partisanship's picking up, midterms are inching closer, like people are starting to accept that maybe this entire bill doesn't happen. This is a strange set of strategic choices on the part of the Democrats. I think the net results are going to be disappointment. I'm not sure why they made this set of choices.
Do you think it had anything to do with appeasing the progressive wing of the party?
I think a lot of it's for appearance. Yeah. I think a significant number of Democrats are like, look, if we get this to the floor and I say I voted for it, I fought for it, and we can blame, in this case, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, then that's a better look for me than this thing.
Than ignoring you and telling you it wouldn't have passed, like letting them be the bad guy. Interesting.
So let's bring this back to the fact that I think we're going to have a relatively open Democratic primary in 23-24. Which is wild. The return to Iowa. Oh, this is another thing to talk about. It looks like Iowa is still going to be very early in line, despite all the talk about shifting
That's
order.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like that. You know, shit's ridiculous. So it's going to be the return to what Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina. They might reshuffle the order a little bit, and so the candidates are going to be back. If you look at who's going to be back, probably or almost certainly. Some combination of Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar. I think all three of them are running. Elizabeth Warren has been signaling she might run. Bernie has said he almost certainly will not run, but who the heck knows. Elizabeth Warren may make the bet that's like, hey, without Bernie, I absorb a lot more. Mm-hmm. And then I think you have some new entrants. It seems that Marianne may run again. But under the new entrants, I think you're going to have a couple of governors join the field.
Yep.
J.B. Pritzker of Illinois just self-funded his upcoming gubernatorial campaign for $90 million himself. His net worth is several billion that we know of. It's probably a bit higher. So if you have a political actor who's willing to go $90 million in on a gubernatorial race that, you know, like, I think he's going to win, like, how deep would he be willing to go for a presidential? And if you're the Democrats and you're up against Trump, who has, like, starts out with, like, let's call it a $200 million cash advantage, you know, is that appealing? I think Kyrsten Sinema runs for president, and I can dig into that one a little bit more.
Dig on Kyrsten.
Kyrsten Sinema is a fascinating figure. I saw her speak, and she is not to be underestimated. She is very, very confident and dynamic as a speaker. In terms of her background, she's a super marathoner. She's got a very, very high level
of... There's a data super marathoner. They run like 100 miles in the mountains and shit.
She's a super marathoner. She's bisexual, I believe, and
I don't know
openly bi.
Okay.
When you imagine someone who's completely self-contained and cool with themselves, and could give a shit, like what you know you're saying to her on Twitter or whatever, like could give a shit. She, I believe, is running. She's positioning herself now as something of this moderate voice because now she's in this anti-filibuster camp for some sort of institutional integrity. By the way, I do disagree with her stance on the filibuster. I think that I think the filibuster is bogus.
I should blow it up.
It's made up.
We all like it because when our party's not in power, it prevents, in our opinion, bad laws from getting passed, right? And it has saved objectively bad laws from being passed, but it also prevents most things from getting done.
Yeah, and it's made up. It's just, that's part of it too. It's a made up rule. So I disagree with her stance on that, but I believe that she's someone who can very easily see herself as the leader that the country needs, and that there's a need for moderate independent voice.
Got it. Would she run as a Dem or go independent?
She probably would almost certainly run as a Dem because...
It's kind of the way Bernie ran as a Dem.
Right? Yeah, like, and it's just a lot, lot more structured,
yeah.
A lot easier. If you run as an independent, then you run into problems. Though, again, I do believe that there will be a third-party candidate that declares this year. And
yep.
So I am for, you know, obviously a challenge to the duopoly, but I don't think Kyrsten Sinema ends up taking that lane.
I think people know this instinctively, but don't always say it out loud or put it front of mind. When it comes to presidential politics, it's all about the money. It's all about the money. And there's three real lanes for the money. There's your traditional donors, just call it your establishment, and the wealthy traditional Democratic donors line up behind. They eventually line up behind one, but it's usually 2 to 5 candidates that, you know, really get some noise there. Then you have your populist lane, which is your crowdfunding lane. And some people cross over, like Pete crossed over decently well. But that's like your Warrens, your Bernies, your you. And then the third one's if they self-fund.
The Bloomberg route.
Yes, the Bloomberg route. I'm going to make this call here. I think we're only a few, within 10 years, I think an somewhat altruistic billionaire just buys the damn thing. Because with enough money, you could buy the whole thing. You can, Bloomberg, if Bloomberg had performed remotely better, he's our president right now. Because he did none of the events, none of the catacalls, no Iowa, no New Hampshire, just bought $500+ million in ads in the Super Tuesday states. And he was leading in the polls. Their internal polls and a couple of our internal polls had him leading. And he was in second in the public polls before that debate where Liz Warren just took him to school. If he had performed adequately on that debate stage, I think he's our president. So you have to be above to average performer. Let's say average performer. But then you just buy the ads. Now, you have to have some sort of credibility, right? You have to have some. I don't think you can be just a total clown.
Well, yeah,
he had a good resume, obviously.
Yeah, he was the 3-term
right.
mayor of New York City.
Yep.
So J.B. Pritzker is going to come in as the governor of Illinois. So he's acceptable to the media and yep. mainstream.
Throw Steve Bullock.
Self-funded.
Throw Sinema, even with like, you know, someone with a senator or governor behind them and or in front of their name and $1 billion. That they actually spend, not Tom Steyer, the billionaire, putting some money in, like actually spending billions of dollars.
Steyer put in hundreds of millions, low hundreds of millions.
Got it. Which is probably not enough to do what I'm saying, but also Steyer had
Bloomberg
no political experience.
On record, 900 million.
Damn.
So you
so it's probably a bill deep. Or two.
Yeah, if it was supplemented by mainstream Dem donors, I mean, mainstream Dem donors would obviously be a little bit less motivated if you're a billionaire because they'd be like, yeah, you got
you
this.
Can fund
like,
yourself,
I'm not
going to
dig. But if you got nominated, then they would pile
then they
in.
Would do it just to get access to you.
Yeah, and to try and counteract Trump.
Right. There's two ways really to compete in the attention economy. There's relevance and volume. So relevant is like, it's relevant to you because you're passionate about it. People identify with Andrew Yang, the Yang Gang, universal basic income. People are passionate about Medicare for all. That stuff is climate change, whatever it is. Or just I identify with identity politics, that stuff. But volume is the one where it doesn't matter if it's relevant to you. You just get beat over the head with it over and over, right? It's like, why does the New York Times retweet the same article 10 times a day, whatever it is? Like, because, or why do you get emailed from Target multiple times for the same sale? It's that volume play. And that's what Bloomberg was able to do. No one really like loved Bloomberg, but he seemed credible. He seemed like he was going to win. You saw
one,
him on
one
TV
of the
all
interesting
time.
Elements of a truly independent run is that you don't need to go to Iowa or New Hampshire.
Yeah.
That's an artificial construct
yes.
as a result of the party primary that's reinforced by the media.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuff is not as impactful as it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot of friends in Iowa, New Hampshire, but let's just look at what happened here. Like, how did Joe Biden do in Iowa? Poorly.
Fourth.
How did he do in New Hampshire?
Even not great. Worse, yeah, worse, yeah.
Yeah. How did he do in Nevada? Also not well.
Better, though. That's what helped him, the unions.
And then it all turned around in South Carolina. So if you took Iowa and New Hampshire as bellwethers, you would have thought it was Bernie or Pete. It seems like if you were to run a campaign Bloombergian style and just be like, you know what, I'm just going to saturate major media markets. I'm going to go crazy. You know, it's like
mm-hmm.
it is interesting how the Democratic and Republican primaries are themselves kind of losing their structure. The Republican primary got overridden by Trump in 16.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020, the Democratic primary held together. Now, Bernie tried to override it and came close. Mm-hmm. I tried to override it and, you know,
I'll get a beer with that guy. Vote
close, yeah.
You know, and the youth,
like,
vote.
You know, I mean, I would fess up to the fact that, like, that I did not come close to overriding the Democratic primary.
Yeah,
I believe you're going to have a number of candidates in each lane. I think it's going to be a scrum as to who emerges. It'd be too soon to tell, but I do foresee some new candidates like Kyrsten Sinema and J.B. Pritzker being very significant.
Usually your bench on these things, if you're a party, is your, obviously your Congress members, senators and your reps, but your governors and strong mayors. And the problem is Democratic big cities and states have been hurting badly. L.A. looks like a hot mess. San Francisco looks like a hot mess. Chicago, not looking great. New York hasn't been great, right? The Dem bench isn't as strong as you'd like it to be. And I think we're going to find, what's going to be fun is that we're going to find out how deep that bench is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. We're going to find out. But I agree with you that the governor is the piece. And that's J.B. Pritzker out of Illinois. That's Phil Murphy in New Jersey. Yeah. That's Gavin Newsom in California.
Do you think Tulsi runs again?
I haven't talked to Tulsi lately. I don't have any insight. I don't know.
I'm sure. It's going to be, say this, buckle up, America, for 2024 clown show. And hopefully we get, you know, someone who can defeat the Donald.
That's going to be the big threshold question again. Who can, like, defeat Donald Trump?
It's like a
rerun. That was the question that it's going to feel like a rerun on the
sequel where you know the ending already.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, do you know the ending? I mean, on this one, because Joe eked it out. He was facilitated by COVID. It's a really, really open question whether whoever emerges from the Democratic primary is going to be able to beat Trump this time.
Yeah, I'll tell you the ending. The ending is a establishment Democrat gets through and gets stomped by the Donald.
You would have to slightly favor Donald Trump. I mean, we don't know what economic circumstances will be by then. But certainly right now, you know, inflation's high. People are struggling. People are super discontent with the Dems. I think the Dems, as you said last week, are going to get wrecked in the midterms. And then it's going to be very hard for Dems to feel like they have positive momentum or energy going into what will amount to a re-election. Because even if Joe's not on the ballot, people will be voting against the party in power.
I also think establishment Dem gets kind of rocked by DeSantis. Like, DeSantis, say what you want about him, and you can say a lot, but he's going to go up there. He's going to say, these mask mandates are stupid. Open the schools, and we need to keep crime down and keep our streets safe. And the vast majority of Americans are going to say that. And the Democratic contender is not going to be able to say that, I don't think, because of the far left of the party.
It would be interesting how, like, a non-Trump Republican would fare, but I don't think we're going to have that. That is as the scenario.
You're probably right.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
We got big news.
Metaverse is coming.
The metaverse. It's here.
Microsoft buys Activision Blizzard for $69 billion in cash. Can you imagine having $69 billion in cash on your balance sheet?
Or being able to part with it and still be a healthy company?
Microsoft. So I have visited Microsoft's campus in Redmond. Have you?
No.
It's like a fucking city. It is massive. Like, Microsoft is a mammoth operation with an army of people. Just as far as the eye can see, in buildings, whatever building you're in, there's another building. Whatever campus you're on, there's another campus. Like, it dominates that entire, you know, area, region. There was a time when Microsoft once declared a special dividend, and it literally, like, increased the size of the local economy by, you know, 15% or
that
whatever.
Checks
like,
out.
Like everyone just ran and just, like, bought a house or whatever. Like it was like a one time, like, they just said, everyone who owns Microsoft stock, we're gonna just, like, give you whatever it was.
What's the budget of New York City? $100 billion?
Yeah, give or take.
In that range, right?
Yeah.
So They essentially bought a company for 70% of the budget in New York City, just for some for some scale here of how big Microsoft is. They're their own country, I think.
They decided to throw down to the tune of whatever, $68, $69 billion for Activision Blizzard. And I have direct experience with Activision Blizzard. Do you, Zach? Have you
I've played.
World of Warcraft, Diablo, StarCraft.
Call of Duty? That's Activision, isn't it?
I think it is Activision. I mean, Activision is one of the biggest publishers. You can look that up. So it's called Activision Blizzard because they bought Blizzard, which made the games I just named.
Yep. I've played Candy Crush and I've played Call of Duty.
Oh, they own Candy Crush. Oh, yeah. So they own a lot. They're one of the big daddies in gaming, where there were three big ones once upon a time. It was EA, Activision, and Take-Two, which made Grand Theft Auto. Now, geez, like Activision Blizzard becoming part of Microsoft. There's so much heft. I have to say that I loved this move for Microsoft.
Okay.
That if you're going to try and compete in the metaverse, owning maybe the biggest gaming company, in addition to what you already have with Xbox.
They own Halo, right?
Yeah, the publisher of Halo, which they bought for a lower amount. It's like, I think, $7 billion not that long ago. So this is a massive move. It's one of those things where it's like a singular target. It's like there's not another Activision Blizzard.
Right.
You know, I love this move for them. It was a 25% premium over what Activision's stock was trading at. It reminds me a little bit of Microsoft buying LinkedIn a while ago for maybe, I think it was like $26 billion or something like that.
Billion? Yeah.
And LinkedIn is also a singular property where there's not another LinkedIn. So they said, let's do it. If you think about people interacting virtually, gaming's the biggest opportunity. Something like LinkedIn might be top five, though, because you're there and you're trying to access professional networks and guidance and the rest of it. Now, what are the downsides of this deal? What it made me think of is that the small need not apply at this point.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, if you imagine video game publishing as this like kind of wild westy industry, and then some like new publisher can come and make a hit game.
Right.
You can pretty much toss that shit out the window. It's like, you know, it's like who's going to be able to compete with the resources of these megacorps?
Or if you did, they'd probably just gobble you up, right? Like before.
Yeah. If you ever made a real hit, like a Candy Crush or whatnot, then they'd gobble you up.
Right.
Take-Two just bought Zynga as well. So this space is consolidating quick. Zynga owned Farmville.
Oh, yeah.
And, Draw with Friends.
In the early days, I was trying to gamify suit up competitions, and Zynga was one of the companies we were having conversations with. It's hard to, as we're learning with remote schools, the kids don't have the.
Yeah, you know the big granddaddy player in the space that a lot of people might not have heard of?
No.
Roblox.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of them. Yeah.
Roblox, like, based upon.
I think they're a little overvalued now, but they are.
Well, they
might be the future.
They're valued to the moon because who the heck knows what goes on. But right. I got to say, if you use my kids as any indicator,
Roxy,
like Roblox could be valued at infinite because like that is their metaverse.
Yeah.
Wait, we should look up Roblox's freaking valuation because that's the move. Like,
I was debating. Carly and I were debating like buying this bad boy, $44 billion market cap, trading at $75.
Can you look at Facebook/Meta's market cap?
$900 billion.
Yeah, so if you're Facebook/Meta and you see what's going on, like you think, you know, can we get $110 billion together to buy Roblox or something like that? And you don't have that kind of cash on hand, but you can finance, you can do a stock for stock. So I think that's the way this world is going. And so the mega consolidation is not a great look. There are a lot of dynamics in tech that end up guiding you towards a handful of mega companies. And I made this point of the debate stage a while ago. It's like, how many social networks do you want? Like, you want one for your personal and one for professional, and that's it.
Yep. No one wants to use Bing.
Yeah. How many search engines do you want? One. How many navigation apps do you want? One. Like, you just want one thing. And so imagining that you're going to have, you know, seven competitors or whatnot makes zero sense in a lot of these industries. And that's true of the metaverse, too. How many metaverses do you want to log into? One. Like, I want to go where the people are, where the things are, where the cool shit is. So you're trying to figure out who actually owns the metaverse. What does it look like? One very significant play would be, you know what it is? Freaking StarCraft, Warcraft, Candy Crush, like all that stuff, like Microsoft's bet. Another bet, which, by the way, this bet, again, according to, you know, what's going on in my household, Roblox would be a very, very big bet. I'm actually going to call it right now. Facebook buys Roblox. Or
it's going to be a bidding war. Like, you're going to see
Alphabet buys Roblox.
Google, I was going to say Alphabet or Apple.
Apple buys Roblox.
I'm saying, like, these guys are all going to compete for it. And Roblox may say, F you, I'm going to be bigger than you. That's like the best hope to dethroning the big four, right?
So here's one of the problems if you're like the Roblox of the world.
You have to interact with them, right?
Oh, no. This is the problem, actually, in companies writ large. So let's say Roblox is a public company, which it is. I don't know if they have those special Zuckerberg provisions where the founder can say F you to everyone and just do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
If they're a normal public company, then you have a board that has a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders to consider whatever's going to maximize the value. So if Apple comes in and says, hey, Roblox, here's, you know, a 30% premium to your current, by the way, crazy hyped up overvalued share price. Then the shareholders, the board members have to consider and take to the shareholders. You know, you can't just say F you, we're going to, you know, keep on kicking ass. You know, you have to at least consider it. So I don't know the ins and outs of Roblox's internal governance. But, you know, on the flip side, if you're Roblox and you look at it, it's like, are you going to take over the world? Maybe. One of the things that happens to a lot of companies, though, is, and this is the Activision Blizzard's rationale for selling, is that they looked up and said, hey, how are we going to be able to compete ourselves at the highest level to build the metaverse? It's like, you know what might help? A parent company with, you know, tens of billions of extra money lying around and, you know, like a giant business platform and a giant this and a giant that. So if you're Roblox, you look up and be like, hey, you know what might help? Like a giant trillion-dollar parent company with devices in everyone's hands and like a set-top box and, you know, in the form of Apple.
My issue, my gut, without being, I don't think anyone's technically an expert in the metaverse. It's not built yet. But my gut instinct on the metaverse is that the problem is someone has to build it and own it, and then we all have to rent or buy from it, right? And it's, if you're talking about building a whole new world, we're at the, you know, like explorer phase, right? Where we're traversing around new areas and either building it, like we're finding areas that, if it's planet Earth, people are finding new areas, claiming them as their own, stealing them, and then selling them for profit, right? In this world, Facebook is going to build said real estate and then sell them for profit. And why does Facebook get to do that?
Because Amazon buys Roblox.
Why does, yes, but why does Amazon? It's going to be the big four. It's Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft. What, gets big five.
One of them's going to go for Roblox.
For sure. I don't know if that's a good thing, right? Where we all have to buy from Zuckerberg.
So this, again, is the concern. And it's been happening in tech for years and years and years. Like, you just have this mega consolidation happening. Trillion-dollar companies. If I start a new tech startup and I say, hey, I'm going to be the next Google. Like,
laughed out of the room.
Yeah, laughed out of the room. Yeah. But if you say, hey, Google's going to buy me for $100 million, be like,
great idea.
I'm listening. and then, by the way, if you fail, Google buys you for tens of millions just for the talent.
Half the time, yes.
Yeah.
My buddy worked on one of those.
Yeah.
And you got a job at Google.
You know, it's like the show Silicon Valley, where, you know, like you reach a certain scale, it becomes arbitrary. You're playing with what Tim O'Reilly calls super money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's almost impossible to compete with super money. The laws of business physics stop applying. I'm a former small private company operator. Like, and you know this about me. I'm really acutely attuned to the laws of business physics. You know, it's like, hey, we gotta watch what we spend and try and grow into it and do all this stuff. But like, after you achieve orbit or liftoff, then like none of that stuff applies to you anymore.
So a lot of these things we use every day are getting consolidated, right, into these big tech companies. But there's still like these small businesses that Google doesn't touch, Facebook they don't touch, because they really can't. Where it's like your nail salons and your barber shops and your law firms and invest in banking a bit.
They still touch them, but go on.
Well, yeah, but you know, you can have a small consulting business or XYZ. But I'm assuming in the metaverse, it just all goes through Facebook, right? It just all goes through
It's probably similar where you can set something up and then, everything. And then they just take a toll.
They take a toll. This is a dream.
This is an exchange rate, man. You had to like exchange
living the dream
dollars for like meta bucks or whatever.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
These companies are racing to make more and more content. One of the things that Microsoft has said publicly.
Record number of scripted shows because the streamers are competing.
Yep.
You know why?
Why?
Because the streamers also don't have to obey the laws of business physics anymore.
Correct. They just
So if you're Netflix, you're like, what's my valuation? You know, like
300 billion.
Yeah, hundreds of billions. It's like, what am I going to spend on content this year? Like tens of billions. What's that? The show? It's like, sure, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Because like maybe there's a chance that you're in the new Squid Game.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm just going to make a whole bunch of bets because that becomes rational at that scale.
Yeah, right. Microsoft had said, you know, one of the reasons they bought Activision Blizzard was their content, right? Like you own those franchises. One, you can make movies off of them. Like, would people watch the Call of Duty movie? Possibly, right? Probably, actually, if it's good. And more games in the metaverse, that sort of thing. The only reason this is working is because we're demanding it as consumers. Like, we want it. We crave it. Are we craving... I'm curious your thoughts on why we're craving it. Are we craving it because...
We're craving because it's awesome, bro.
Because it's awesome. Are we craving because the rest of life sucks? Like, we're consuming more than we ever had, right? People are, I mean, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I have seen them. You have too, where there's more gamers than people playing more video games than ever before. People are watching more TV shows and consuming more content than ever before. Is that just because it's awesome? Or is there some deeper...
I'm obviously kidding somewhat.
Yeah.
But you have... $1 trillion companies spending endless money on entertainments that are algorithmically designed to appeal to a maximal number of us. So, you know, and there are, let's say, four companies that are doing the same thing. Look up and be like, sure, like I'll check it out. I used to think to myself, and maybe this will remind people of themselves, I don't know. I used to see new movies coming out, you know, good, bad, whatever. My attitude was like, if you spend enough money on a movie, I'll see it.
How many Michael Bay movies have you seen?
I mean, it's like that movie costs like $120 million. I could see it for, you know, $10. It's like, oh, that seems like a better value than my seeing that like other movie for $10. And so now you have the equivalent of like $100 million movie coming out every day. You know, it's like I look up and be like, ooh, like over the holidays, like what were my options to watch on streaming? There were at least, you know, five $100 million offerings that I could just like pull on up. You know, it's a cornucopia.
Yes. I watched Foundation on Apple TV.
They spent over $100 million on that thing.
I mean, one, it's very good. But two, the production quality is out of this world. Like, holy shit. I'm watching like deep space battles and I mean, God knows what. And it looks real. So I agree, like, on one hand, it's awesome.
Wait, this is the most important thing. Is Foundation good? Because I haven't seen it.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. I would say I'm a big fan. And it's like...
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, I'm not...
That's what I'm talking about. It's like, I like sci-fi, and obviously I like expensive productions.
You would love this. It's really good.
And I still haven't even gotten to Foundations because, you know, I've been tied up with something else.
I've watched, over break, I watched, what was it, Wheel of Time.
Yes.
That was pretty good.
That's what I was tied up with. I was tied up because I'd read those books.
Yeah.
So if, you know, so if I'd read those books, you make, and did they spend over $100 million on that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I like that. I see where it's going. I'm not sure. I ended up liking The Witcher with Henry
Did I Cable. Watch that? Yes, I did.
Probably $100 million.
Yeah, that was over $100 million,
for
sure.
For sure.
Do you like this new Andrew Yang threshold? It's like, if you spent over $100 million, I should check it out. I mean, that's like a pretty significant
You're saying
investment.
Like the ROI on that. I love the logic. That disgusts me.
Now, I'm obviously being half facetious.
Yes.
You know, because like I appreciate art and humanity and like creators and people doing stuff. But like, if you're time starved, you don't know what the hell to do. It's like, just like.
Someone will entertain me for that much money.
But there's just like a flood of content. Flood of content.
We have this amazing shit to watch at all times. But we end up, I have a feeling we're doing less. Like, I just don't see how sustainable this is if there's like these massive, massive, massive incentives for us to do nothing but consume.
It's Ready Player One.
Yes.
It's Metaverse. It's Ready Player One. There is some gendered element to it because, you know, there's a bit of a guy thing around gaming and the Metaverse. Now, I know trillion-dollar companies will be trying very hard to change that. They'll be like, how are we going to
get... How do we get the women
addicted
to video games?
Yes. Is this going to have negative repercussions for family, society? Like, of course. And I mean, I think that's pretty obvious.
Okay. You know, I want to do next episode. We'll do this next episode. Well, my dad is pretty involved in men's ministry growing up. And I think I've seen the male side and the family side of when men neglect, let's call it other responsibilities for God knows what. But I feel like gaming and getting addicted to shows and things like that is going to be a factor in that equation and what it's doing to everything else.
Oh, yeah. It's going to end up making it harder for boys to become men, for men to form successful relationships. Like, I look at this with my sons.
Yeah.
I look at them and be like, how's this going to go? And one of my boys is autistic, and he's going to struggle more.
Right.
But there's something frictionless about a lot of digital environments. And I've been married now for 11 years. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of friction in a marriage. And so if you're cultivated to detest friction, the most important relationship in your life has significant levels of friction, then, you know, are you going to make it like over a multi-year period? Let's dig into this next week.
Yeah. I was talking to Carly about this. She said both of her parents and my parents, and it sounds like yours, knowing your dad came, your parents came from Taiwan, like they both made massive personal sacrifices to be a father and a mother, at least for the other, they're sacrificing their careers or personal health or their own relationship and things like that. And she said, I have less of a desire to do that. And my friends who have kids, like similarly, like they're good parents, but it's probably not the same amount of like full-time commitment the way I feel like my parents were like all in on.
My parents were that? Completely selfless. My parents subordinated any of their own personal desires to try and create a better path for me and my brother.
Same with my parents. And do you feel that same urge for Christopher and Damien, or do you feel maybe you can have it both ways because things are faster and moving like that, or maybe less so because society's more built? Like, I just haven't felt that same drive, and my friends and peers.
Yeah, I have a completely different outlook than my parents did, because they immigrated to this country and they were like, we're going to keep our heads down. We're going to make a living, and we're going to try and do what we can for our kids. And I actually took their sacrifice very seriously, where now I'm like, hey, I should be thinking bigger about what I do and like my impact, because otherwise, why?
What was that for?
Yeah, what were the sacrifices for? Now what's happening to my kids? It is TBD, you know what I mean? I think getting raised in a completely different way than my brother and I were raised. Oh yeah. And like, am I concerned about it? Also, oh yeah. So and I try and remind myself it's a different time, different era, you know, like we're like, but it's tough, man. I mean, like like everything TBD.
Right. It is totally, it's not just a little different. It's the Shawshank Redemption quote. It's like the world, when the guy gets out of jail and he's like, wow, the world went up and got itself in a great big hurry. Like we've accelerated the change, right? So like even being born 10 years apart now, it's like a different world, right? My sister's 6 years younger than me and her high school experience was fundamentally different. There was just more smartphones. So I don't know. And so next week, guys, we're going to do another deeper episode, I guess. Because I do think unpacking this requires some research and time, which we need to put into it. But more to come. I'm shifting gears.
To the Buffalo Bills?
To the how great this vest is right now.
Yes. Bills at Chiefs is going to be the freaking game of the season in my mind. Like, I think whoever wins that game wins the Super Bowl.
They're probably favorites for the Super Bowl. You still have to execute, right?
Yeah, because I don't believe in the Tennessee Titans. Sorry, Tennessee fans. I think the Bengals have a fighting chance to upset the Titans, which would give the Bills or Chiefs home field advantage against them, if that comes to pass. I mean, but I think either Kansas City or Buffalo can go to Tennessee and beat the Titans. So whoever wins Bills-Chiefs goes to the Super Bowl, where they play probably the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, or the Bucks, right? Or Brady.
In a warm weather stadium, that'd be a nice change in LA, for some good people.
I'm going to say this, and if you don't care about football, see you next Thursday. Go ahead, fast forward. Or Monday, we'll be back Monday. But if you do, or just find this hilarious, or you hate the New England Patriots, I just want to tell you what just happened. So I drove to Buffalo. It's 0 degrees, okay? Now, for context, the New England Patriots have been our big brother forever. They just beat us every time. And what I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Tom Brady's record against us was like 33-2. Like, it's ridiculous. They've just stomped us forever. And last year, we finally beat them. It was like, yay, we beat them. We won the division. Hooray. And this year, we're like, we're going to keep going back there. I got a rookie quarterback. Don't worry about it. And we play them. The Pats are doing pretty well. They beat up, like, they beat the easier teams on their schedule first.
They went to Buffalo and beat you in that shitty game.
So they went, they come to Buffalo. I think their first AFC. We're tied for the division. And they beat us it's a monsoon.
Like, yeah, it was a weird
They threw game. The ball three times. We couldn't complete passes in the red zone. We had like four opportunities to throw a touchdown pass in the end zone. We missed a field goal. We lose by 3 points. And the Pats, instead of saying, hey, our rebuild's working, we've got a young quarterback, and like, we're feeling really good, they just start talking shit. And the national media is like, Patriots are going to the Super Bowl. Like, Google this. Like, look at what the national talking heads are saying about the New England Patriots. They're the best team in the best. Bill Belichick is a genius. He's the greatest coach of all time. And it was infuriating. So then we get to play them again in week 16, and we stomp them. We beat them by multiple scores. Like
45-10.
Josh Allen looks great. It's fantastic. We beat them on the road. The Pats lose the division. Game. We win the division. Great. And then we get the playoffs, and we have to play the fucking Patriots again.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, well, this is the rubber match. This is where we're going to show Bill Belichick's genius. That last game was a fluke. And it's 0 degrees. Everybody's like, Josh Allen can't play in weather. He can't play in the cold. The Buffalo Bills aren't good at home. Patriots have their number. And it's like, oh, my God, if we lose this game, it's all back to normal. And we go there and we stomp them. It was 27-3 at halftime, guys. It was 27-0 for a bit. And it was like 35-7. It was a blowout. And literally, after halftime, it's just a party in Buffalo.
How many people were there?
70,000 people.
70,000 people partying.
Just a party. And people are hugging. It's so, like, you have a beer, it's frozen. The beer is frozen. It's that cold, right? So everything's frozen. I had to thaw. It took me like 3 days to thaw out. Like, when you take a shower and still feel like you're getting warmer. But it was up there. I've been to Duke Carolina games in Cameron. It was up there with that, for sure. In terms of experiences.
Might be once in a lifetime sporting experience. Hopefully crazy, not, man. Because the Bills keep winning.
That's
true. But yeah, you go there and you beat the boogeyman.
So
you
guys,
exercise the Patriots.
Yes. So if you know a Bills fan in your life, give them a hug. It's the greatest week of their life. This is great. If you know a Patriots fan, tell them to suck it, because they've had their, do not feel bad for the Patriots fans.
They had their run.
They had their run and they talked a lot of trash. So yeah, I'm feeling good. Now look, we got more to do. Got to beat the Chiefs. But my prediction was a Bucks-Bills Super Bowl. So we'll see. So we got to beat them to do it.
The Bills have that vibe, man. I got to say. I mean, you know.
Josh Allen's special. We'll see. Like, our Lord and Savior Josh Allen, special guy.
My brother watched that game and hadn't seen Josh Allen play, and he was like, who the hell is this guy?
He threw a perfect game, as a 7 possessions, 7 touchdowns. He's the first time in NFL history that a quarterback has not punted, thrown a pick,
he's or had a kick field goal.
And he's amazing.
And it wasn't just the throws, too. He can freaking run.
He can run.
Like, he's a beast.
He can steamroll you.
And you know, like, quarterbacks, when they run, they seem to be a little...
I worry about getting hurt.
Leery of contact.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't sense that at all from that guy.
He lowers his shoulder, which is not good in the long run, we don't think.
It's because he's a cyborg.
We just want one Soupy, man. Just one Super Bowl. That's
Just give me one.
It's going to be such a big game.
It'll be fun. So you got Bills Chiefs 6:30 tonight, or tonight, I wish. 6:30 Sunday night. If you at me on Twitter, at Zach Grauman, @Zach_Grauman, I got Zach Grauman and I forgot the password and the email. It's a hot mess. So I own both. But at @Zach_Grauman, I will be biting my nails too much, but it will be a fun game.
That's going to be crazy, man. You're going to be freaking nervous as
oh,
shit.
Yeah. Very nervous. But be fun.
But and maybe look, exultant. Super happy.
It'll be great. You're not – so I need to mention this because the Yang Gang knows this. You're not allowed to make sports predictions about the Bills.
Too late.
On Twitter. Don't tweet it, dude. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Too late. That curse is broken, too.
Yang's
we don't believe the curses around here.
Are awful. And which is hilarious to me because you – like, you're pretty good. Like, you're pretty insightful about sports. Like, whenever on the trail we're talking sports, I feel like you watch a lot of sports, especially basketball. And they've just – every time you tweet about something, it just goes the other way. Not every time, but
I lost some coin flips.
Yeah, we've lost some coin
flips. I lost some coin flips.
So you're not allowed. And so I have Bills fans in my mentions like pretty often. I don't read all my mentions, but I do read some, especially if they're Buffalo related. And they're like, don't let Yang pick the Bills, Zach. So here we are. Andrew, you're not allowed to do it. Just say, go both teams.
I respect superstitions. I do. So on my side, to close it out, I just got back from Houston, Texas, the Forward Tour, and it was dynamite. I had a blast. I want to go back to Houston. It was one of those types of trips.
Cool.
But we are launching some Yang Gang swag to the world. And when I go out there are people with math gear who are like, hey, like, I'm trying to get a new one. I'm trying to upgrade and whatnot. So it's now available at andrewyang.com because of pent up demand. So if that describes you or someone in your life, check it out.
Yeah.
Until next week, let's go Buffalo.
Until next week, let's go Bills. See you guys.